Ready to start it?
Let's go ahead and make some comments and then turn it over to
Sure. Sure. First of all, welcome all of you to Des Moines Water Works. We have had Jason very busy meeting with folks, and I appreciate everyone being flexible in light of Denver not being able to respond to a small snowstorm. Jason's schedule was thrown off a whole day. I don't know if you heard about that, Mayor. So thank you, Vern. I don't know how many separate times I gave you for an appointment, but you were
I'm here.
I appreciate you being flexible on each one. So with that, Jason had outlined two workshops that we want to cover. This one is very meaty. It's extremely important in the overall process. Diana, please come on up. And so with that, Mayor Gear, anything that has happened since the last meeting that you want to make us aware of, or all yours, Jason?
All right. Thank you for that brief introduction. Welcome to this very first workshop that we've put together here for this facilitation process and this regional examination, if you will. I don't want to spend a tremendous amount of time on background on this because I think everyone in this room has a lot more history on it than even I do. And I've been looking at this for a month, and I've been kind of drinking from a fire hose that entire time. There's a lot to go over. I've laid out what the early part of our discussions ought to be based on my views of what I've heard from everybody and what I presented to the group last time I was here on the Wednesday meetings. So tonight's topics are on two very crucial parts of the principles, the guiding principles that this group has adopted. One is, and I'm going to use some different terminology, but one is I'm calling the obligation to serve. We'll talk a little bit about this, but really, what is the obligation to serve? It's the promise that the regional entity will be making to everyone in the region as to what it's providing, to whom it's being provided, where it's being provided, and how. And that'll be first on our agenda tonight. Close second to that, hand in glove, is this notion of right to serve, which many of you have referred to in my conversations with you as exclusivity. The two things are pretty much synonymous, and I'm using the term right to serve rather than exclusivity because it's a little broader in its context. But the right to serve is all about the notion of not having competition with the regional entity and its performance of its obligation to serve, which is what we're going to talk about first. We'll get into more detail about both here in a moment. I did want to go over a few ground rules or rules of engagement, if you will. And obviously, this is not my process. It's yours. I'm only going to make a few suggestions here. And if you'd like to amend any of these, please do that as we're going along here. But a couple of things that are going to help us along the way here is being candid with your comments and not withholding anything from the group. What we're going to be doing as we go through all this is trying to find those areas within these topics where we have strong agreement, consensus even. We'll note those. We also want to note where we have agreement, but perhaps not total consensus, so a little bit weaker agreement on some issues. And we want to identify issues where we simply don't have agreement. As we do this, and we'll be doing it here on our whiteboarding software as we go along so you can see what we're doing as we're doing it, we'll flag the issues that we need to come back to, things that we don't have strong agreement on or things that we don't have agreement on at all. And we'll bring those back to you in future workshops, perhaps, if we're not able to get to them this time. So that's why, as we go through this, please make your comments candid and constructive. And understand that they're, I think, safe here in this room. I think what I'd like to do, too, is make sure that we stay on topic. Definitely, there's a lot of directions that we can go here with these discussions, and I want to provide for a lot of that free thinking. Think of this a little bit as a whiteboard brainstorming exercise in certain ways. but we are going to get to future topics at a future point. If we start getting too far off of our main topic for tonight, I'll probably ask the room come back to what we were talking about so that we can keep on our agenda for this evening. We do have a parking lot, however, so if somebody comes up with anything that's related or even unrelated to what we have tonight, I don't know if you see that little mailbox up there, parking lot issues. Those are things that we can put there, and we can definitely circle back and come back to those in a future time. But we don't want to miss anything that you've identified as being important to gaining agreement on what a regional framework or a regional organization ought to look like. So don't be afraid to bring those things up. Just please be patient. We might need to park those until a future date so that we can discuss them in more depth than we are prepared to do tonight. And then we'll have action items, right? So if there's anything that we need to follow up as your consultants here, things that we can help surface and kind of clarify for you, we want to take actions there. If there's things that any of us need to have actions for, we'll try to log those as well so that everybody can kind of have some direction leaving here.
Jason, would this be an appropriate time for us to go around? Many of us have been meeting, but there are some new faces, and I'd also like our audience members to be able to introduce themselves. Okay. And I know you brought a guest with you. So.
I did, and this is David Gordon, who's with our firm FCS Group. And David's excellent job tonight is going to be trying to keep track of this huge exchange of ideas in a format that we can all follow. And I'm glad he's here for that, because I can't do those three or four things at once.
Just throw things at me. Yes.
John, would you like to introduce yourself? We're going to go around.
John McEwen, Urbandale Water.
Dale Atchison, Urbandale Water Utility.
From LA City of Altoona.
Scott Sanders, City of DeWine.
Mark Wallace, DeWine Water Works Board.
Gary Lorenz, Ankeny Mayor.
Paul Derenfeld, Johnston Mayor.
Jody Smith, West Des Moines Water Works.
Steve Gehr, West Des Moines Mayor.
Karen Novak, Swalwell, West Des Moines Water. Diana Wilson, West Des Moines Water.
Kirk County, Mayor, Des Moines.
AJ Johnson, City of Riverdale.
Bill Stowe, Des Moines Water Works.
Sue Huppert, Chair, Des Moines Water Works. And welcome back here, Amy.
Amy Kaler, Des Moines Water Works.
Peggy Freeze, Des Moines Water Works.
Luke Nelson with Norwalk.
Jim Utter with the City of Altoona.
Craig Robinson, Des Moines Water Works.
Don Peterson with the Iowa Park Group.
Julie Stouch, I'm a resident of West Des Moines.
Andy Tisch, Warren Water District.
Stan Ripperger, Warren Water District.
Great.
Thank you for doing that. I'm terrible about those introductions. Thank you so much. The first item on our agenda tonight is this obligation to serve, and hopefully all of you have had time to read this position. I call them position papers, and I sometimes call them issue papers, and then I sort of freely interchange those ideas. I apologize for that if the terminology gets out of whack, but this is what I'm talking about. I want to try to build one of these for each one of these workshops. The reason for them is not to prescribe, but rather to help get past the inertia that any large group of people would normally have in trying to have a discussion on a topic. In this case, what we're trying to do is gain a sort of mutual understanding about what it is we're talking about here, first of all, and how it fits into the regional plan. Those are the first parts of the document there. In the middle is our proposed starting point, and I wanted to be really careful about the way that we communicate that, because the proposed starting point here is sort of a massive synthesis of all of the comments that I've received individually from folks, and I'm trying to pull it all together in a pretty simple place. I've probably not done a very good job of capturing every idea. And probably some of the comments that I have on here are quite brief, but they're not meant to be comprehensive. The idea of the starting point is really just that. It's to give us a place on the map from which to go, and the full expectation for this evening and every evening as we get together and talk about these things is that we take this idea and we move it where you want to move it, because this is your process. And so we'll start with a certain point, and then we can move on from there. And then towards the bottom of each one of these papers is a little bit of a discussion. Let me scroll down to the bottom there. A little bit of a discussion that might help in terms of kind of spurring your thoughts on things to consider in this particular context. some of the things where we know that there's some implications later on, and just some overall, just sort of discussion here. I've meant to keep all of these very short. They're not meant to do anything other than give us a place to start from and then a little bit of momentum coming out of the gate so that we can move on with our discussion. And with that in mind, since I've just kind of thrown that up there, and hopefully you all have a copy of this that you've already seen and maybe have it in front of you, but why don't we go back to our whiteboard? And as we talk about the obligation to serve, I'll try to synthesize a little bit about this, and I might just read directly from the paper that we've got here, is what we're talking about is we're describing what the regional entity will provide, how it will be provided, to whom, and when. So the definition of the obligation can impact and probably will impact other important issues that we talk about later on. The obligation to serve works together with the right to serve, which we'll talk about next tonight, or you might call it exclusivity, and also what I called a regulated price, but you know, I don't want you to read too much into that. It's a price that's not based on market. It's based on what the board determines, whatever that form becomes in the future. And that forms a compact that allows utilities to operate in the public interest. So we have a promise of service. We're granting what amounts to a monopoly for that service within a given area, and we're doing that at a price that is cost-based and rational and all of the things that make up a utility rate. How it fits into the regional plan is it basically becomes the mission of what the regional entity will do and how it will perform. So a couple of the things that we started with is the services that the regional entity would provide. And if you could expand on that, David, we can take a look at what we've at least proposed as a starting point. And then I would like to turn it over to you for discussion so that we can start capturing your ideas and I can be a little quieter. But in the guiding principles, it talks about water production. And what we would like to get to tonight is a little more specificity about what that means to each of you and make sure that we at least have agreement on that. And if we don't, that we identify what that is. Once we understand what it is we're trying to provide, we'll move on to some of these other topics. And please have a free flow of discussion and thoughts as we're moving along here. So I'm going to step back now. What we're looking for at this point is some discussion about exactly what services you say that this regional entity should provide as it relates to this water production function. And you can use my things as a go-by, the things that are in front of you, or you can come up with your own, and we'll catch all of this as we're talking. Okay. Well, let's start with source water. Okay, so where do we have that, David? Show it to him. Okay, one up above that. All right, when we talk about the water production function, what is it that we're talking about more specifically? We have to get the water, we have to treat the water, we have to serve the water to a certain point. And it's important that we specify what those things are, because again, when we get into the exclusivity part, we're going to be talking about granting a exclusive right to do these things for the regional entity, and we don't want to over-define what these things are, but we certainly don't want to under-define it either. So one of the starting points that I gave to start with here is, can we gain some agreement that it is going to be the regional entity's promise of service in the future to take care of the withdrawal of surface water for the purpose of providing drinking water to this regional area that we will define in a geography in a little bit.
Jason, wouldn't we say that the goal here is to timely provide the water that each of the entities need? I think the one word that's been left out of the position paper is timely. I think communities are saying, make sure that you can provide us with the water that we need when we need it. Because there are some large projects that show up that have huge water demands, and if we can't meet all their infrastructure demands, they're not going to come here, i.e. a lot of data centers, but other large developments. And I know we're going to get exclusivity, but some of the communities that we've visited with, They like the concept, providing we can meet their demands when they need them. Otherwise, they say, I need to look at control of my own destiny.
Good.
Well, doesn't that get into how and when? Because I'm not quite sure where the data center is, for instance. Is that a 24-hour, 365-day-a-year constant demand, or is it peak load under certain circumstances they need another way to cool stuff, for instance? And if so, that would mean that they would need a certain amount of water stored someplace to be able to tap into on that demand. So it wouldn't be a production situation 24 hours a day, 365 days a year, under certain circumstances.
And it might be where it's located. To me, the overall goal here is we have to represent to everybody that's going to participate. You're going to get all the water you need when you need it. If we're going to ask them to say, we want you to be exclusively part of this entity, okay, if you can meet my needs when I need them met, I'm happy to be part of it. But if you can't promise me that, I can't agree to be exclusive. Because then I'm in a situation where I maybe can't provide what my community needs when I need it. And do I want to invest all this capital in a regional one if at some point I got to go do my own thing because the regional people can't provide what I need? I'd rather save my capital and invest it in my own facilities that I know I can control. Now, to me,
is that in terms of production or storage or both?
Both. Because everybody's going to control their own distribution and their own lines and all that. The idea is we all want to make sure that we're guaranteed the amount of water we need when we need it.
And, you know, I think about Mayor Dierenfeld, whatever economic development may come her way. I mean, today we're saying data centers. 10 years ago, we wouldn't have been talking about data centers. And if this is truly a plan that we can look forward to, it may not be, you know, Mayor, something that, you know, they could store. It may be, you know, a production facility that needs peak demand at the time that we don't want to offer it. But she may certainly need to in order to draw that business to Johnston. So I think we have to be careful that we don't think in terms of today's businesses, but think in terms of just what you said, you know, meeting the demand when we need it, however much that is.
We had an item on there at the level of service, which is a couple of notches down here, that might fit what you're talking about. We talked about no denial of service to the members, which was meant to kind of fit into what you're talking about here. Is that a fair statement too? We can connect those two ideas.
Yeah, but I think you got to add timely to all of this.
Okay.
What the community is going to say is, okay, you tell me you can meet it in 5 years, I need it in a year.
Yeah.
Now, intuitively, it makes sense that this group ought to be able to meet demands a lot quicker and cheaper than people can individually. So it seems like we ought to be able to make that representation.
It's a very strong statement. I'd like to discuss it with the group if you're all willing to put this on the table for now. I think that's a very strong commitment, and would like to know if everyone agrees with that as a general concept, that the regional entity would be able to provide the demand as it's needed is a pretty all-encapsulating mission statement.
Well, obviously, from our technical meetings that we've met in, and you've done a long-range plan, which tried to include everybody's needs in there, but, and to your benefit, Mayor, with the data centers are what we've seen anyway, and no, it's not a 24-hour a day, 365. It's when it's the hottest season of the year, and they got to do, and they do have storage on site, or at least Facebook has a lot of storage on site, and then they might be using it for a while, and then they keep reusing the water, and then finally dump it, and then replenish. So it's not a daily thing, but that's now, like you said, Sue. That's now. That's not however many years from now. But it is important to be able to have that benefit, like you said. And that's the thing with us too, because we got the production and you want to have a regional entity, but where does that limit that?
Right. And I think if we can't agree to that concept, you can't ask for exclusivity. you can't ask for a community to say, I agree to be exclusive, but you can't provide what I need when I need it. You just can't do it too long. They're diametrically opposed.
It seems to me that there's also a part where if an entity is coming into this region, that they would be able to choose any community without regard to the water as a locational decision, is part of what you're saying. So as if we're all part of the same bargain, that would be out as an economic development factor.
That's a good point.
But on the other hand, economic development, a heavy user like a data center or whatever else is heavy use, in my opinion, or mine, the biggest factor is just everyone's overall growth. I mean, we're bringing families into the region here. All of us are growing. All of us are using more water. So, and I don't know what the time frame is. Where's that wall? Is that wall 5 years out? Is it, and just take the data centers off the table right now. Is that wall 5 years out? Is that wall 10 years out? Or is it less than that? We have to be able to tell our residents that you don't have to be worried that when you turn on the spigot, the water's going to flow. I think everybody should be realistic that water's not going to get cheaper as time goes on. I mean, there's just too many elements in it that are causing that. But for me, my biggest concern is how much will we have, and kind of like what Steve said, when will we have it? And not necessarily because we've got somebody that's going to be coming in using X amount a day, I mean, just from growth in general. I think that's one of our biggest responsibilities, to say that the region can continue to grow because there will be water for that region to grow with.
And Jody's probably the best expert, but it seems like these issues have been handled by the WRA, because you can't build without toilets flushing. So the WRA's figured out how to get the big trunk sewers where they need to go and all the other lines with financing at times to go. So there may be some lessons learned on how that was managed at the WRA as far as capital and staying ahead with sewers.
Well, we have the electric grid that's basically the same across the metro area. The San Francisco sewer is now the same across the metro area. And what we're looking for is to make water the same. It's there, regardless of where the development's going to be, regardless of what kind of development it is. That's what I'm interested in.
So, regardless of what those future demands ever turn out to be, the idea that's on the floor right now is that this regional entity would be prepared to meet them and would take the actions necessary now in order to be ahead of that curve, of course, so that we don't have the situation where we have to have any kind of denial of service or the dreaded M word on all of our building. We don't want that.
Well, and how far ahead of it do we need to keep? I mean, our daily demand now is, 55 million gallons or something over like that, with a peak of what?
90.
90, total capacity of 125, something like that. So do we need to stay that far ahead of the demand? So if it picks up to 120, do we need to somehow figure out in a very short period so that we can stay ahead of it that far? Where do we get another 20, 25 million gallons a day to be able to immediately tell somebody who's a big user, yeah, we can take care of it? Is that part of the question?
Yeah, to me, you've got a good start with your 2040 plan. I would think with this group going, each year you would update your capital budget and your visions out based on what everybody's seeing for development. So to me, you shouldn't get behind. And once you have the commitment that we're all going to figure out how we finance it, then it's just a matter of updating your plan and looking out ahead.
Right. But as was pointed out a few minutes ago, five, 10 years ago, we never would have thought about data centers being, we would have thought maybe a rendering plant would be something that uses a lot of water every day, all day, and we ought to be really prepared for it, and what if we get some more? Plus, they employ 5,000 people.
Right. I probably shouldn't use that as an example. That was my timely example. But I think you've shown that you can even meet that demand very creatively, by the way. Mm-hmm. But when they say, okay, in 2 years, I need to have X million gallons available to me on the hottest days, we figured that out. It seems like a regional group ought to be even more effective at figuring that out than we all kind of scramble figuring out how to do it.
Just to introduce another concept, and I very much appreciate the long-range plan that I think all of you have talked about, looks at five-year increments and what production is going to be necessary to meet at least what's foreseeable demand based on conversations among a lot of you. Also have to remember, you don't want to overbuild, obviously, because that becomes another financial constraint that our ratepayers face. So there are a lot of balancing and planning pieces that come into this, but certainly, you know, as operating people, a number of us here would love to double our plant capacity tomorrow if you'll pay for it, but unfortunately that isn't very wise either in the long run, so there are a number of measures that have to come through.
But I think that would stay in check as each community is going to be responsible for putting in their own lines and maintaining
Absolutely.
Them. So we're not going to be investing millions of dollars in lines in areas where we don't need water for a long time. So to me, there's a check
right.
and balance there.
You're absolutely right.
We need the water. Do you have your lines in? Are you ready to go in the area? If we have, we've already made the investment. Or no, we're not. It's going to take us 3 years to get our lines in. Okay, now we know how we're planning forward for that demand for the supply. Mm-hmm.
So the appropriate timing of how you stage the investment, I think, maybe is something that can be left for the future organization to determine. But the promise of the service that it will be available on demand as a mission statement for the entity seems to be something that there's some agreement in the room about. Am I wrong about that? Well, why don't we put that under something that there seems to be consensus about, Dave, so that we can flag that?
Can we just add the word reasonable timeliness? I want to make sure, when you bring up the what it took to pull together the opportunity and us working with you, and I don't know if other folks are aware of what happened on that, but there was reasonable timing on that. I mean, it wasn't tomorrow.
Right.
We're going to expect to have 40 million additional gallons a day. I mean, we, again, not knowing what kind of industry is ahead and what kind of water needs, I'm just concerned about, not saying reasonable timing and assigning that responsibility maybe to this regional group. Mm-hmm. I'll just put that on the table.
And again, we're back to actual production of the water itself. It's going to be up to the individual communities to put in all the rest of the infrastructure to get it to where it needs to go. So what we're saying is, make sure you have the gallons I need when I need them, right? And so you want to say?
Well, a reasonable time. I mean, a negotiated time or something that would be reasonable to this regional entity. You know, all of a sudden, if Ankeny has an opportunity for 20 million additional gallons a day, it may not happen, but does he come back and say, hey, I need it now?
Well, to me, that ties in the exclusivity.
Sure.
It does.
And again, and then if the reasonable time for the regional entity doesn't meet Gary's needs, then Gary's got to have the ability to go get it himself some other way, so we can't hold the exclusivity.
But I think one of the things that we can probably agree on here is if the obligation to serve exists, and that becomes the mission of the regional entity, the regional entity engages in all the planning exercises necessary to meet the needs as envisioned
yeah.
by the group that's doing the planning on that and the regional board. And of course, any group could be completely surprised by some demand that happens to be requested onto the system that wasn't planned for. That wouldn't be any different here. And
okay.
the entity would have to make adjustments, just like you would if you had your own issues to deal with. But I think to the mayor's comment is, as a regional group, you might be much better positioned to deal with that because you might actually have built some capacity that you could deal with to begin with and be able to accommodate the need. So I think where I'm drawing the line here that I think we can agree on is the regional entity itself would engage in the planning functions and the board and the regional entity would work out the timing and staging of the investments, and there would be an approval and governance process around that. But that the mission, as might be written into whatever intergovernmental agreement we end up with, would say something to the effect of the intent here is to have the supply ready when the demand is made, when the request for demand is being made. And that it's a very strong promise in that regard that we don't take lightly.
And maybe, Bill, you and Jody, the WRA, for instance, if there's an opportunity that the WRA just can't physically or financially meet in the time frame, can't a city go ahead and advance the money for the sewer and then the WRA pays them back? To me, that's another alternative that I think we would rather say, okay, the regional one can't meet it, we're willing to front end it, but let's budget to pay us back, which is exactly what's happened, I think, for development in the WRA that's gotten out ahead of where everybody else thought it was going to go.
Absolutely correct.
And to me, that's a great way to solve the issue because it's a lot more cheaper for us, not us, any of these cities, to advance the regional piece and get paid back versus trying to go on their own.
Where I think you could tie what you said, Sue, and what Bill was talking about, have a reasonable buffer of what you can produce and what you're going to use.
Yeah.
You don't want to get to the point where you're overbuilt or underbuilt or just right on the border, and then some big user comes in and you don't have the capacity for 3 or 4 years because you have to build the plant or somebody has to build the plant. So you need a little bit of cushion there, which I think that's where the reasonableness comes in. So.
But isn't a portion of your point also, Steve, that if the conditions fail, that is that if the regional entity, a reasonable request is made and the regional entity can't live with it, that that's an exit provision for the community?
Has to be.
I think the challenge
there's a sanction there somewhere.
I think the challenge with that, some communities might say, well, then why am I going to invest all my capital on a regional one?
Yeah.
For fear that I have to get out and go on my own, I'd rather take that capital and build my own facility.
Right.
That's why I like this notion of maybe that entity, maybe that city then, or whoever, or county, advances the money with the regional, say, okay, we're going to pay you back as quick as we can. Because I don't think anyone complains on how that works with the WRA.
No.
Well, there's a difference with, the way they're a collector versus, water production goes, to make your own little tiny water production plant, and have the money come back. I think there may be a limitation on the way WRA versus what we can do here if somebody needs extra 10 million gallons. I'm not sure. I guess I would be concerned about that as far as, if we're all, distribution's one thing, and we're all going to continue owning that. It's the production of the water and where that's coming from. Is there a, if you need to advance in one area versus WRA, they're just collecting things that's coming in from wherever they set up their coins.
There's a tourniquet on the WRA because there's only so many gallons that can go through the plant.
Yeah.
And there had to be so much relief by getting the combined sewers offline in the city of Des Moines. And a number of other things allowed the plant to operate much more efficiently.
Yeah, a temporary solution. We get heavy wet weathers, they go pump the water around in circles down on the south side. You don't have that benefit if you want to draw water off drinking or that or whatever. The other thing is, for instance, the data center. So they were, I don't know how long it took in West Des Moines, but we spent, seems like the better part of a year negotiating everything even to get them there and knowing how much water they said they were going to need, and then they didn't need anywhere close to that. But I'm going to say that throw out 1 million gallons a day is a lot for a data center. They're way more than they're going to use. And if you can't absorb 1 million gallons in a couple of years' time or 3 years' time, because it takes them that long to build and get online, then, but you might get something else. And in Gary's position, it won't be that long. You're wanting to pump water up to Elkhart, by the time they get you'll just keep moving and moving, and you're building pretty fast. So that's a pretty done deal, and you can see that in advance, I would think.
Yeah. That's why I'd like to think the regional group would say, okay, we need to have the capacity to do X millions of gallons more than what anybody thinks we need for that year, so that no one's surprised. But again, it's more economical to do it that way than other people to do it. So you'd like to think you're not going to get in a position where you're going to have that. But to me, the fallback is then the community needs to advance what they need to advance as long as they know they're going to get payback in a reasonable period amount of time.
Why don't we park the idea of financing, because that's going to be part of some of our future discussions and how those investments get paid, if that's okay with everyone in the room. I don't want that to detract from the rest of our discussion on the commitment of service. Well, we have a very strong statement out there that I think that we have a fairly good consensus on in the room. I'm not seeing anyone raising their hand in objection, that this idea of we provide the water on demand when it's requested then leads itself to some, okay, if that's to be the case, then here's some things that need to also be considered with that obligation of service. And they kind of go to where I started the discussion. And I'm glad that we had this one, because now my part actually makes more sense. So the idea of what it is that the entity is providing in order to meet that commitment probably needs to include the things that I have on that list. David, if you can draw their attention to that over here. And it really is, what are the functions of the production of water that are necessary in order to provide that? And so I was talking as we started off about withdrawing the source water, storing the source water, reservoirs, or in aquifers, treatment of the source water, plants, transmission and pumping if necessary through a transmission system, and I have some finished water storage in there. Now that list comes from a review that I've done with the general managers to get an idea for what is out there in terms of the regional inventory, and it's a summary list because it's individual assets is a much longer list. I think what would be good is if we had some consensus that those things right there are indeed the things that the regional entity does need to provide and does need to have purview over in order to meet its obligation as it's been put out here on the table. So to put another way, if the regional entity is not doing those things and it also has this obligation to serve that we've just defined, is that a mismatch or is that aligned? So my proposition is the entity, whatever form that takes, needs to have purview over those things in order to meet its obligation. I see some nods.
Just to be clear, that list then would include all the regulatory, potential legislative, all those functions within?
That's a great question.
I would think so. If you're pulling the water out of the ground and treating it and going from there, then they've got, if they're going to have control over that.
Fair enough.
But unless you do like the WRA, where you got an operating agency for that entity.
Well, that's okay. That list is not going anywhere. Yeah. Let's leave it right there. But let's go down this trail for just a minute, because we want to address that concern while it's fresh in everyone's mind. And it is something that has been brought up and we've discussed with the general managers group. We meet sort of separately so we can talk about technical issues. And this is one of the issues that we've been discussing. So, why don't we discuss it for a minute? Now, I've defined it as a level of service, which is sort of how will the service be provided and to what degree. And when I said here state and federal regulatory requirements, pretty all-encompassing level of service there, it means that it meant, as I was writing it, that the entity would have some responsibility to be defined by this group for meeting those water quality requirements that fit within those regulatory regimens. And how exactly it goes about doing that is a question for this group, but I think there is a need there
to be able to, if you're going to be in the water production business, you're going to have to be in the federal and state regulatory compliance business. And I don't know if those can be disconnected in any way.
Can we talk about how that's done today? Just so that everyone knows, because again, not just Urbandale, West Des Moines, Des Moines, but how is that done today by the three producers? Well, by the two producers.
West Des Moines Water has several sets of permits. We have our own water allocation permit, so it would be right from the state to withdraw source water.
Okay.
And that is held by our board of trustees. We also have an operation permit, which gives the requirements for the treatment process and the quality of water out of the plant, again, held by our board of trustees. And then...
Distribution system.
Distribution system, thanks, Bill. All of our... Everything is held. And I would assume that that is the same for all systems.
Yes. Similar. We've got... DNR gives us a license for so many gallons of withdrawal and then treatment operation and then distribution. We've got all of it. Of course, we don't have a water board. Just the city of Altoona.
Right.
The one component that I don't know if we've missed it. Well, I know we haven't missed it, but we haven't discussed it much. I mean, I've been to all of these and it really hasn't come up extensively yet. But it's the relationship between the regional entity and either this facility or all three water boards together. You know, if we finished up everything this afternoon and we're ready to go with this tomorrow, we're not in the water production, the regional entity. If we're saying we're going to be in the water production business, but we're ready to go tomorrow, this is the water production entity. How is the regional board meshing with either Des Moines Water Works or all three water works together? It's probably a better way to say it. There's got to be a connect between those four institutions, and I guess at this point, I'm still unclear as to what that connection is, and I think that connection, once it's defined, helps answer some of these things that we're just talking about.
Yeah.
That's something to put in your...
It's an issue that we're kind of still discussing with the technical group, with the general managers, so there's some options that seem to be available depending that would help with that relationship that you're talking about. There's some concerns with doing anything with the permits that would sort of move them from where they're being held right now, say consolidating them. There's some concerns about that.
Yeah, and I'm sure that's just the tip of the iceberg of the technical side of what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. But I think there's also a governance side to that. And I think that's what everybody needs to get their head around first. And if we're at least a pretty good idea of what that might look like, and then start picking away at some of this other stuff.
Okay. If I heard you right, I think what you're saying is that the governance structure will help define what we do about this particular issue.
Yeah, that one
regulatory.
That one branch has got, four or five, right where the arrow goes right through the middle of it there.
Yeah.
Up to the upper right a little bit.
Those things there.
You think? So the governance structure would determine how the entity goes about meeting its obligation to serve? Or is it just the regulatory issue that you're referring to here?
No, I think it's the treatment of, the biggest one I see there is treatment of source water. How do you govern that from a regional perspective if
when we start this, the regional entity actually has no treatment facility, which they wouldn't. I mean, the treatment facility, we've got two different entities that have treatment facilities. What's it look like?
Right. If it helps with this discussion, I'm not sure it will, because it might make it a little bit more complicated, but here we are. This is our job, is to delve into complicated things. Let's take the idea of we have to provide a level of service that everyone can rely on, and the strong statement that was made that we got concurrence on here earlier is the working model that we have. So we need to provide the demand when it's requested of us, and that needs to be the mission that we accept. It follows then that the regional entity, to the extent that it has the ability to meet that promise, has to have the ability to do these things. So whether they own the facilities or not, they need to be able to have the ability to manage and direct the activities significantly so that that mission can be met, right? So there's different forms under which the entity could go about the mission of, for example, doing treatment without owning the facilities and meeting regulatory requirements without owning a permit. So that would all depend on the kind of operating agreement that ends up getting formed with whomever that entity ends up being, which is definitely going to be something for another discussion one day. But you see where I'm going with this, is that the direct ownership of the facilities isn't necessarily the determining factor for the regional entity. There's different ways that they could go about meeting their obligations without having that very direct ownership.
If I could say so, well, one important piece of our principal goal was rate setting. And how do you have rate setting capabilities without having this administrative authority? And I think that's a picture that goes back to all of these things, that if you're going to establish rates and set the principles to go forth, you have to have some clout, if you will, as a regional board to determine some of those directions as to how you, which affects and touches all those points that Jason's referring to. So it's an all-encompassing picture, and I think you're right. The governance issue reaches to all these things, but we have to determine how or what we want that to look like, whether that regional board has authority to the extent of the authority, what we want that to have.
Certainly not an easy issue, but maybe if I could bring it back a little bit. If we have some agreement that the regional entity has to meet this obligation to serve, and those types of functions that we've got listed up there in that middle branch are things that the regional entity needs to have at least the authority, like the word you used, administrative authority to manage, then it probably follows that, at least with respect to the regulatory side, that they need to be able to at least monitor that and be able to have some management authority over it, whether it's done directly by them or through contract. Probably need to have an alignment there. How it takes place is something I think we might be able to settle in a future workshop. All right, so let's make sure we park that. That's how, you know, literally how we meet that regulatory requirement through whatever form. Is that okay that we put that in the parking lot for the time being? Because I don't know if we're going to be able to solve that here. We need to know more before we can actually make that one a solution. Okay.
Does that capture, though, your, I'm not sure that captures your issue, Gary.
I don't know if it captures it completely, but I will just park it and just keep working through it and just keep coming back to it if we need to, I guess.
Okay. Let's look at some of those other levels of service, though, because I think this helps put in perspective those functions, or I'm calling them the services that's in that list of source, storage of source, treatment, transmission, finished water storage. Those are the, when I say functions, that's what I'm talking about. And the level of service is sort of how those functions would be provided and to what degree. We've talked about a few things there, and they go right to the heart of the obligation to serve that was first put out very eloquently to start this discussion. What does that mean when we say that we're going to be able to meet that demand
when it's requested. And we talked about the state and federal regulatory requirements a minute ago. Look, let's take a look at the rest of that list that I sort of preceded for you so that we could spur a little bit more discussion. So when we say we're going to meet the demand, what demand? The demand that I think is most relevant here is what we would call maximum day demand, which is different than meeting sort of an annual requirement that is a volume. And it's a capacity figure. I think hopefully there's been enough discussion about that in the past that everyone understands the difference between capacity and volume. Is it worth talking about that for a little while? In other words, when we say maximum day, that has certain implications for what the regional entity would then be doing from a planning perspective. It means that there's a certain day during the year where I literally have to provide, I'm going to get this all wrong, but say 90 million gallons per day in order to meet all of the demands that have been made requested of me. And if I don't hit that 90 million gallons per day, then I will have failed at my mission. And so it means that the regional entity, whatever form it takes, would need to do everything in its planning authority to make sure that they had enough capacity so that when that maximum day increases, that they're always ahead of the game. So it's that maximum day that they're sort of chasing and trying to stay ahead of rather than some other measure of demand. So I'm throwing maximum day out there, first of all, as a somewhat of a technical thing, but a very important thing because that's the capacity we're talking about. And I would sort of look towards the general managers here because they're the smartest people in the room about this issue. If I've got that wrong, I definitely want to be corrected. Okay.
Is that what you plan for now?
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. So we'd be meeting, obviously, the current maximum day. We'd have to plan for the future maximum day.
I mean, that's key again to the exclusivity. It's harder for somebody to say, I'm not wanting to be exclusive, when you can say, we're going to be able to meet this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Averages don't work.
Okay.
So what happens when you're surprised by the maximum day?
Or the point is never to be surprised.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, realistically, you look at supply issues, you look at demand issues, weather issues.
The surprise is if you have a major
there's a failure
at the plant.
Yeah, there's a failure. And realistically,
you have the gallons.
All of this, yeah. Even the projections, are built with some assumptions about mechanical failures or mechanical problems. So that you don't want to be surprised.
We also, in the event of an anomaly, have conservation plans that we would institute in quick order.
Yeah,
we all do.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
We have similar.
Yeah. We all try to get on the same page, in fact, when we're doing
that. Yeah, along these lines, when we're surprised, because this can happen, especially due to plant shutdowns or failures that might occur. Everything's mechanical. These things can happen. Curtailment, to the extent that it needs to happen. And this could happen for different reasons. It could be, drought reasons, perhaps, but also mechanical reasons. To the extent curtailments needed to be made on those sort of force majeure kind of issues, what I've written down there in very short form is proportionally that those demands would need to be curtailed. And it's sort of an important concept because what it means is there's no preference given. Okay, so if we weren't able for a force majeure kind of reason to meet all the demands on demand, in other words, we weren't able to meet our mission, how would we drop that so that it was fair? And all that is saying is it would be done proportionately. So, if you're 10% of the demand of the system and we needed to drop demand by 10 MGD, you'd get a 1 MGD reduction and so forth. So that was another thing that I had on the list that is related to this issue here. Does that make sense to everybody? It kind of goes.
It does. It might not. To bring up data centers again. Some of those guys. And if it was a rendering plant or somebody else or something like that, it wouldn't make sense to them at all. We know that in advance because we've already fought that out in our contracts with Facebook and that, how it's going to work out. So, but those are things that we have to deal with.
I'd like to think as a regional entity, our citizens are very cooperative on those issues. To go out as a regional entity and say every community needs to conserve 10%. Now it's not, West Des Moines only has to do 1 and Des Moines has to do 20 and Urbandale has to do 5. all the residents see that they're all being treated the same, and they're all being asked to make the same sacrifice that everybody else is making. To me, that's a better way to manage this and a fair way to manage it.
Yeah, okay.
Is there an issue with, I know when we develop our conservation measures that we didn't, they're not all in concert necessarily. I mean, they might be similar. Is there a issue when we say everybody does 10%, how each of us goes about that might be slightly different in the demands, and how 10%, is there a reconstructing of the conservation measures that would be needed to make sure everybody's on par with each other?
10% could be different depending on the community type.
Right.
How much commercial water use they have.
We've got different levels that we hit, depending on gallons, which are going to be different from other places. So it may not work the same way. I don't know if that's an issue that we may have to visit later to make sure that there is a parity.
Actually, I think we're pretty similar on board with our. We kind of did that as a regional.
Yeah.
In 2012, we all came together, stood in front of the camera, and said, "Let's cut back. We need to cut back." And based on that, as a region, we pretty much developed something very similar to what you have.
Sure, sure.
It's good thoughts. I'm going to ask that we park the man management water conservation issue for a future conversation, because we are going to hit that. But the idea of proportionality and equal expectations is something that we've captured for that already, and we'll keep that moving forward. And the reason I want to speed things up is I'm cognizant of the time, and we really need to talk about the right to serve as well. So as this list right here, as you see it here, I do that level of service there, I do want to hit just for a moment longer, is, and I've thrown some things in here that may or may not be important, sufficient pressure. I got the impression during one of my conversations that making sure that the pressure's right in the right places was something that ought to fit in the obligation to serve, and I didn't want to neglect it. And if it's not important, we can take it out. But again, I'd look to the general managers to give me a nod one way or the other that should be important or not.
Agreed upon pressure probably is.
Agreed upon?
Yeah, we have varying pressure delivery requirements. Yeah, minimum.
Okay.
Agreed upon, I think, probably.
Okay, good. The idea of not denying service to any of the members kind of went towards the first thing that we talked about, is that that's one of the promises that we're making, that, you know, as long as you're a member, we're not going to tell you no. That's part of our mission. And if we do have to tell you no, then we've kind of failed in our mission, and shame on us. There's some sanctions there. And best practicable costs is something that I put in there myself. And that doesn't mean best possible cost necessarily. It means the best cost that we can achieve as a regional entity.
And how is that measured?
That's wholesale price you're talking about.
We would have to come up with what that means. But the notion is that it's meant to be provided at a cost, and the best cost that we can come up with as a regional entity. It may go without saying, but I didn't want to leave it off the board. Any objections to these things? There's anything that I've missed there that really needs to be added to this idea of what is the level of service that's being provided by this entity? Because I'm certainly not trying to be comprehensive here. This was meant to kind of get the conversation started. So anything that's missed that really needs to be added.
I'm sorry, I don't want to kick this too hard, but what do you mean by best practicable cost again? I mean, I know there's efficiency concerns, I know market issues, I get all that, but I'm not sure I know what that's supposed to mean.
Best efforts.
Okay. You know, I'm struggling with that as well, because it seems to me that what we're really going to strive for is what is adequate and reasonable.
Right.
In the cost, not best practical.
Okay. We can use those words instead.
The regional board would set the wholesale price.
Yeah.
Once it went to the individual utilities, they set the retail price.
Yep.
The notion is we all want it as cheap as we can get it at the regional level, and then it's up to each jurisdiction to decide what they want to charge at the retail level. Mm-hmm.
Say that again, because I have already started to hear some rumblings out there. Why would you ever take away the rate paying responsibility from West Des Moines for your own citizens? So I want to make sure that message is delivered.
You guys were pretty clear when you first asked us to get involved that the goal would be the regional board And the governance would be, I think everybody who's participating is going to have a seat at the table. Now, you might get into nuances on certain things, but we went those nuances like a dart. But the regional board would set the wholesale rates for the water production, and then it would be up to each individual utility board or city, whatever their governance is, to set the retail rates for their own residents. So they can charge their residents whatever they want to charge them for the water. But the goal would be, it's going to be cheaper for all of us to produce water regionally at the cheapest price we can get it, and that's up to these, you know, each community to decide if they want to charge the residents.
This was the idea that I was trying to get out in this particular piece. So, you know, choice of words being totally yours to make, but that's the general concept.
I think maybe what Jason was headed to in the terminology here, cheapest possible price. I don't think we want to go down the road of Flint that says we don't invest anything back into the infrastructure and back into things. But we do want to make the best quality, the best determinations of treatment type, the best way to determine the best quality water to deliver the product that we want. So there's a balance there.
At the lowest possible price.
I think all of our
at the most possible price.
But I think once your users understand that ultimately their local jurisdiction is going to set their price, I think they're less concerned about the regional one.
Yes.
Because they're going to say, I'm going to hold my local people accountable for what they're charging.
Most of them.
And so why would they ever want to charge more or charge less than what they have to buy for wholesale? Doesn't make sense. Where they're concerned is, I don't want Karen and her board to lose control of what they're going to charge residents in West Des Moines. And once they understand that, I think they breathe a sigh of relief and they're not as much concerned about what's happening behind the curtain.
Yeah, I think the point I was trying to get to here is the regional entity's role only, not the local distribution system's role, but as a regional entity to be able to provide the water production function at, you know, best cost, I'll say, adequate and reasonable cost, to use the words that we came up with here, is a worthwhile level of service to offer to the region. So what is that? And the board that gets formed from it can determine what that is. That ought to be within their remit to do it.
We've got, you know, various communities with different age of infrastructure and their production, the way that they produce the water too. And I mean, even within Des Moines and what we've got, the kinds of water that are coming in, and those are, and so, you know, basically we have to mix that and see where we come out economically on that. And if one community is producing it at 50 and another's at 49 and one's at 65.
Where does it average?
Saying the average is at 55 is not going to make one community very happy at all. So
that's,
I mean, what we're trying to get at is solving that problem. Correct? Is that what we're trying to get at?
No, I think that's right. And you're going to have, I mean, the regional entity is going to have that. So you're going to have different cost functions coming from different directions, and how that gets passed on to everybody in the region is a definite issue for the board to consider.
So can I just test my understanding? And I want to use Johnston as an example, not Urbandale, West Des Moines, or Des Moines. So how would the rates be set for Johnston? They don't have a water board.
City Council.
Yeah, that's the way we do it.
Okay, so the regional entity would pass along what the purchase capacity price would be to Johnston, but they would set the rates exactly as they do today.
Yeah, and I know the analogies for some of you fall short, but same thing with sewer. Obviously, WRA passes on a cost of treatment to each of the communities, and you make your individual decisions about what the retail cost of sewage treatment is to your residents. And it's based on, you know, whatever philosophy, condition of your system, however you view capturing a surplus and taking it into your general fund, whatever it may be. Same thing here is what we're talking about. You want a reasonable production cost, obviously the adequate and reasonable cost, but what you decide to do for your distribution system and for your other philosophical needs is up to the individual communities. The production utility just provides a unitary price of cost of producing water or cost of treating sewage.
Those are the kinds of questions that I'm starting to hear from residents, some that are in the room that are saying, how is it set? And if the more assurance that we can give them that it's the same, the better off we are. So now, Windsor Heights, let's walk through that scenario. They are a total service customer to Des Moines Water Works.
And essentially what happens is we meet individually with Windsor Heights, look at their capital plan, and based upon what they think their needs are in conjunction with how we view that, there's a separate rate that's set for that.
So we wouldn't see any, I mean, just so we're all clear, we wouldn't see a change to that process at all either, because they are not buying purchase capacity.
Correct.
We're just talking about production rate costs of the regional sets, not the individual.
Yeah, that's all.
But just for some more clarity, is a regional board going to have that responsibility, or Des Moines Water Works?
Des Moines.
You tell us, Scott.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's what I'm
Well, in the guiding principles, it suggests that the regional entity will have rate-setting authority over these water production costs. So that's what's stated there. Now, how you actually want to perform that role is up to the group, but that's what's in those guiding principles.
So I can pump water out of the ground for X dollars, and I'm doing it right now. Diane's doing it for X dollars over there, or Y dollars, and that. So then we got to figure out how all that fits in for anything over and above what we're already doing on our own.
We purchase now, so we have that.
And I purchase not a lot, but I do, and so it still falls in the same place.
To be clear, the cost that would be sold to both of you from the regional entity would be the same. You're going to charge different rates.
Yeah, over what we already pump, right? Or not.
Over what you already pump.
Well, in addition.
Sure. As it is now.
Okay.
But the regional entity would not set
retail rates.
The Des Moines guys that they're producing. They're not going to reach down and say, Des Moines, you have to produce it at this rate, because they're going to say, Des Moines is going to say, this is the rate we can get it to, and then we make that decision. And then everything else is the same as it is today. Nothing changes.
Right.
Once it goes into your community boundaries, then you're responsible for the rates from there on. So you got your rate that's going to be established by the regional entity. And then after that, because we're all the same, the rates are all going to be different once the individual citizens, because Urbandale's needs and costs are different than Johnson's, different than Ankeny's, because we all have different types of projects going on, and that's going to determine the citizens' rate. West Des Moines the same way. So all the citizens will not have the same rate. That needs to be made clear, but it's not because of the regional entity that's doing it.
Yeah, I think something that I just heard that I want to make sure that we get on the board, whether we deal with it now or in the future, is okay. But that the rate charged to everyone who buys water from the regional entity would be the same. Is that everyone's understanding?
The wholesale rate.
I'm talking about the wholesale rate.
Whoever buys wholesale water gets charged the same.
Yeah.
With the exception of purchase capacity.
Yeah, so you're going to have two rates.
Okay.
Yeah. Well,
or you could.
No, maybe not. I don't know how that's going to work, because the contract's with Des Moines.
Right. That's going to be interesting at all.
So that's another hurdle that has to be addressed relatively quickly, because there's a lot of dollars tied up. Purchase capacity.
There is.
See, that's kind of what I was talking about. I was talking about the relationship between the regional entity and Des Moines Water Works. I mean, if it costs X amount for Des Moines Water Works to produce 1,000 gallons of water, that's what you're starting to build the wholesale price on.
Yes.
And anything else, whatever else gets added to that because of the regionality. But this is just an example of there. If the regional board says no, Des Moines, it shouldn't be that high. And whether they base it on fact or fiction, we think it should be this. What happens then? And again, that doesn't have to be answered now, but that's just kind of what I was talking about, of the relationship between the regional board and the physical production board. Because you're the ones that are making the water, and the regional board is the one that's taking responsibility for the wholesale cost of water. So I guess at some point we just need to, I don't know when the proper time for that, but at some point I think we just need to spend it.
Oh, yes.
I'm going to pick on Bill, but Bill's Des Moines Water Works, and he can make the water for $2.
A dollar a thousand.
Okay, for $1,000. I mean, and literally that's where the most of it's coming from. So $1,000 is what it's going to start at. And the regional board's got to try to work to.
But Gary's point is now if you say it's 75 cents a gallon,
regional
1,000 gallons or something.
Them, yeah.
But I guess my bigger thing is, at this point tonight, I'm not sure what the priority of decision-making questions is right
Understand.
Now. I don't want to jumble up the meeting by trying to do anything like that, but we need to, in my opinion, we need to get some priority as to what happens first.
Yeah. So one of the things that is going to lead to that discussion, because the economics that are involved here are going to involve synthesizing a lot of what we just talked about here. So what is the regional entity actually responsible for? Therefore, what does it have to pay for? Therefore, what needs to go into that cost function to begin with? And then what is that going to look like once it gets turned into a wholesale rate? Those are the questions that we kind of need to grapple with. That's why I've identified it as a second order issue rather than a first order. We are going to get to it, but there's some things that we need to deal with first so that we can have a more informed discussion at that time. If you're willing to allow us to park that for the time being, I can guarantee you it's going to come up in a future workshop. Okay. Why don't we get to the Can we get, get that parked. So let's take a look at the right to serve. And we've actually touched on this already, and it's great that we're presenting these two topics in tandem with one another because they fit so closely. We don't need to, let's take a look at some of the ideas that we pre-populated this with. So some of the concepts that, you're getting too many things up there at once, Dave. Going to confuse everybody. Some of the things that we pre-populated this with was this idea of what the regional entity really is granted in this idea of exclusivity. And I mentioned the word sort of monopoly before, and that's not a bad word. In this case, it's really what is envisioned here, is that there's only going to be one provider of these water production capabilities here in this region. I think that's in the guiding principles, and it's pretty clear. So what we've talked about here, is to get the conversation going here, is, first of all, what is it we're talking about? Well, with respect to the obligation to serve, and that meant the things that we just covered. So meeting that water production demand on demand with those functions that we talked about, source, treatment, transmission, pumping, et cetera, within the geography that we need to define, and we still need to talk about this for a second. And then what does that mean? There's generally some provisions there about what it means the members would refrain from doing, or what we would prevent other parties from doing in a broader sense within that region with respect to water production. So we're protecting the regional entity within this region from the, I'll call it, threat of competition, and that's an appropriate word to use here. And we want to do that in a way that's highly defined. So I think we've got the obligation to serve pretty much discussed at this point. I think we just went through that, and we're all okay with where we came out for the time being. Can we talk a little bit about the geography, about where that exclusivity would apply? And the start point that I've put out here, based on my discussions with everybody that I wanted to start from, is this notion of for all, can you highlight that one, Dave? For all current and future drinking water demands. And within this geography, I also had a note elsewhere in here that said the geography would be the current and future political boundaries of the members. Okay, so there's a couple of concepts at play there. One is, what demands are we talking about, drinking water demands? And what area are we talking about, the current and future political boundaries of the members? So as the area grows, that the jurisdiction size grows with it by political boundary. And I put the concept of political boundary out there rather than the concept of delivery network or what you might call service area for a pretty specific reason, mostly because I want you to discuss it and talk about the pros and cons of each. So it wasn't that I had a preference there, it's just that I wanted to give you somewhere to start. So within the geography, current and future political boundaries of the members, does that make sense as a construct or should it be something else?
Seems like it has to be that. So you don't have a city saying, well, you can only, you're in for this part of your community, but when you grow in this area, you're on your own. If Ankeny's in, they're in. Wherever their political boundaries morph into or any of the cities that are involved.
What do you do with rural water?
They're not controllable, I think, in this situation.
Right. Well, rural water is controlled by, well, at least what was Southeast Polk rural water is controlled by Des Moines Water Works.
Yeah, but some of them are not.
Some aren't.
Yeah, I know. There's others, but.
But do the participating jurisdictions continue to have the right to buy the rural water service areas as they grow?
I would assume.
That's up to the rural water to determine whether they want to sell that. They don't have to.
But do the member communities have the ability to buy? Is the question.
To offer.
Yeah. And I.
And you have a rating for it right now. They have a formula for it. Why do you smile? Because you do, for on our end of the county, you do.
I think it's negotiable.
Well,
I'm sure there's some folks in here that have paid.
Then I can get it cheaper. Is that what you
mean? No, but I can get it more expensive.
You already raised the rate on it.
Well, and see, that issue not only stems to this, but it also stems to their ability. I mean, it hasn't been very long ago Zany was going to build a treatment plant. So where does that jurisdiction land here? How is that? And we're talking about different animals. Inuvialuit is clear to the northern part of the state, but literally has the west side of the state.
I think one of the related aspects here to consider in this discussion is that you might need to consider whether the regional entity should ever serve non-members, or whether that needs to factor into your decision making here on how this works. So the members would be signed on to the agreement, and they'd be beholden to making sure that the costs were being recovered and so forth for this thing. If you're not a member, you're not a member.
How does that work to be a member of something right now that we don't know the price of? What? Does it become a membership fee, or does it become all of that?
We're really not at that point yet, okay. But I think what we can assume is that the signatories to the agreement would end up being members. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Just two kind of add-ons. One of them is a parking lot, I think. The entry issue, I think, is real. I don't see it addressed here. What if a new community wants to come in? And I want to go back to Dale's point about Xenia, which I'd not tripped on that before. Every other community here, the meets and bounds of them as members is defined. Xenia is not. We provide a portion of Xenia's service territory water in the far southwestern portion of their service territory. We do not provide it to Clear Lake. So they're a little different animal.
Does that apply to Warren as well?
No, Warren's defined, essentially.
But the individual entities this language is precluded from buying that territory. Not sure that's what
I would agree with
we're inclined to do.
I would agree with you.
So
the Warren and Xenia provide, they're a little different animal.
Yeah.
Than West Des Moines or Johnston or Des Moines.
I know Mayor Gere has reached out and had conversations with Mayor Armstrong. Grimes is the one I'm thinking of in this regard. What if Grimes wants to participate?
That's the entry question.
Yeah, and I think you've got to give them the opportunity. If they choose not to, 5 years from now, when they're upside down, they can't come in now and say, okay, I'm in now. I mean, it seems like you're either in or you're out from the get-go. That's a community that's not yet part of the conversation. But it seems like you go to the service area and say, okay, here's the structure, here's the idea. Are you in? Because if you're not in, you're on your own, and you're going to stay on your own. You don't get to pick and choose. I don't think it's fair to all of us to pick and choose. to say, well, I want in when I think you guys can do it cheaper than I can do it on my own, but until then, I want to control my own destiny. I don't care the rest of us.
That's why you like you having a parking lot issue.
That's a very good parking lot issue.
You were talking to Winterset even. Right. And that's a long ways away, but...
Right.
I think our team might be able to help provide some context on that.
We just wouldn't have to.
Yeah.
Right. So you could evaluate it and say, okay, under these conditions, we'd welcome you. But you don't get to dictate. You don't get to come in on the same terms the rest of us started out on.
It's a huge capital cost issue.
Yeah, some kind of buy-in would probably be required at that point. Let's make sure we park that one, Dave. Let's talk about the exclusivity a little bit more. Well, I'm not sure we got past the geography. Let's not move past that just yet. I heard that it was a pretty good idea to call it all current and future political boundaries as opposed to wherever our services might extend to, being sort of an important defining thing there. And it says of the members, right? So who exactly are the members? They're the ones who've signed on to the agreement. And to your point that we just parked, potentially subsequent new additions that would come in under whatever terms we end up determining for that. But that would be the region that we're talking about this exclusivity extending to, and anywhere outside of that region, it wouldn't extend to by definition. Does that make sense to everybody?
You're talking production there,
yeah.
So we're not talking zero tolerance that if a local distribution entity wants to provide outside their city limits, that's okay.
Well,
or is it not?
Well, and that was going to be my question. Johnston provides water to Polk County residents outside of our political boundaries. So I think this is drafted too narrowly because it
for zero tolerance, that would work.
Well, by contract, currently, you can't do that without permission from the one water.
Well, and that's that's probably the case. This is written in a way that we couldn't do it. This says we could not provide water service to anyone outside of our political boundary.
Okay, so I might be able to add a little bit to this. One of the pieces of the guiding principles talks about certain exceptions to the facilities that exist currently, water production facilities specifically, and I think use West Des Moines as an example. So they have the AC Ward plant. It provides service inside of their own distribution system. And the thought was that those water production facilities would A, not be part of the regional production capacity, and B, would be allowed to continue to operate in that role, providing service inside of their own distribution system. But I wasn't aware of a production facility currently that was providing services outside of its distribution system, but you've got an example.
No, we don't produce.
Okay.
But we have pockets of Polk County within
their past
our area.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, they haven't been annexed yet, but we're providing distribution services.
And that is unusual. I think you do too.
Well,
I think you do too.
Planning
area. East side of the interstate.
Future annexation boundaries.
I know it's all annexed.
Well, we'll see.
See, that's
we have some
and that's kind of what you
future residents.
I think what you said about with West Des Moines, that's the way Altoona would fit in.
Yes,
we've got our own.
Yeah, that's
and
another
so
example.
Additionally, would be
I could have used that one too, but use the other one. But you're right. And so with the distribution system question, I think, first of all, the distribution functions aren't even included in this regional discussion. So if you were buying water from the regional entity and serving it to whomever, that you would be buying it from the regional entity and you wouldn't be doing your own production. That's
right,
the
right.
That's,
okay,
that's the issue here.
Okay, as long as it doesn't restrict our ability to serve.
Yeah.
Outside
you
your
geographical
boundary.
Serve, definitely, but producing water. So this was the key here in all the discussions I've had is basically going out and building new plants and getting new withdrawal permits and things that would interfere or circumvent the monopoly that's going to be awarded here to this regional entity is not something that we want to permit as a region. And that's listed in the members will not list right there because, unfortunately, the exclusivity comes with some do nots attached to it, and we have to talk about those in that context. So I've got a few things listed there, some of which might be smart and some of which are probably kind of silly, but I listed them only to get conversation moving on the members will not side of this. So I think before I move on to that list, is it fair to say that we have reasonable concurrence on what that geography is? I think we reached that, but I don't want to, okay, put a flag on that, my friend. Wonderful. And then this, what this means is within that region, here's some things that we're agreeing that we will not be doing as members of this organization so that we can protect that entity from the threat of competition. And a little bit about the threat of that competition is it can result in this concept and reality of stranded investment. All right, so let's just assume for a minute that we don't have a very strong right to service defined here in the agreement. And regional entity has this really strong obligation to serve that we just defined, and we go out there and we do the planning and we make the investments to make sure that we're always ahead of our peak day. We're never going to be surprised because we're doing a great job. And now we've got all this capacity that we need to subscribe in the region, and we feel confident about that because we've got all the planning data. And all of a sudden, somebody comes in here and builds a 50 MGD plant and starts selling water at 90 cents per thousand or something. That wrecks the model, and it causes all the cost and the price for everyone else that's adhering to the model to go up as a result. So it harms everybody when we don't mutually provide that right to service. Does everyone understand that and how that works? One of the things that I heard a lot in the discussion was, gosh, we've got this penalty that occurs when we go over our capacity with Des Moines. And I would challenge those who said that it's sort of like what I was just describing is once you use more than what you bought, there's a cost that goes along with that comes alongside it. Not really a penalty so much as it is a cost that's real. That's what would happen here if competition were allowed to exist concurrently with the entity, is we'd have XMGD not being used for a long period of time, and everyone else actually has to pick up that cost in the meantime. So it's really, really important concept that we define as strongly as we can in your enabling documentation, the agreements. So here's some lists of things that would help with that. One is we're going to agree to not acquire or contract for drinking water supplies, in other words, water production, either from any other party or from any contractor. And we do have an exception there, and the only thing there is what I've already mentioned. So it's the plants that already exist that provide service inside of their distribution systems. Altoona's one. West Des Moines is another one, and Ankeny is another.
When you talk about water use allocation permits, et cetera.
Yes.
And expand existing permits. What if the, now they use AC Ward, 10 million gallons right now, and one of the wells goes bad, or any event that you need to keep the 10 million gallons. I'm not sure this language allows that, but maybe it does by saying expand existing permits beyond what we already have.
Right.
You see what I'm getting at?
Yeah, good. Let's talk about that.
You've got to get, by this, I don't want to be hamstrung from West Point perspective that we can't go back up and get a permit to get us back to 10 million gallons if one of the wells goes bad.
Fair enough. I wanted to put it up here so we could have this discussion. So what does it mean when we say that we're not going to do water production in the area? And what does it mean with respect to the existing plants, right? So I took a much more restrictive idea here to put it out in front of you and see what the thoughts were on it. Now, if you go with a stronger version of the right to serve, then you would want to make sure that any new capacity that was needed in the region was being served by the regional entity so that all the costs could be recovered and we can get the maximum efficiency and economics from that regional plan. If we allow expansion of these other facilities, and in other words, to serve more load, even if it's inside the distribution system, there is an argument that says that model is weakened as a result, right? Can you see that? So if we had competition, and it was that extreme example that I gave, this is a smaller example of the same concept. So it's worth discussing about what it is you want to allow here in terms of exceptions, and realize that only a few of you even have these facilities in place right now, and it would cause others who don't have those facilities to basically not engage in any activity. So there is an equitability
factor here too, with respect to all of the members, if you can understand that.
There is, but if you can't put 10 million gallons through the plant, and that means that the regional authority then has to add a million gallons back to the the production side, which is going to jack the rates up. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Seems like when you start the entity, you ought to be able to protect your current capacity. You can't add to it, but you ought to protect what you currently produce.
Do you produce at capacity now?
Not currently. It's a source water issue, which we're remedying currently. So this time next year, we will be able to produce at our treatment plant capacity.
But a factor here that I think you need to be aware of, their production costs are going to be less than ours, simply because they are coming from the aquifer, not from surface treatment.
Yeah, I was just curious.
Which isn't an issue. I mean, it's
they
a
were
fact.
In capacity, that takes the question out of it. You can't increase it if you're at capacity.
Right, but what Jody's point is those shallow alluvials and our deep wells will go bad at some point, and they'll need replaced, and we need a provision within this agreement that allows us to replace those wells.
Okay.
Don't increase the capacity. Yeah.
That's the point that I think I missed. Is you're talking about protecting the capacity that exists currently.
The ceiling of 10 remains by whatever means.
Right. And I think it's fairly easy to fix the language to that. But I don't want to presume something that is there that is really not there.
And I'm sorry I missed that before, but I understand your point now.
And it seems like the intent of the conversations was the additional capacity that everybody needed. No one was arguing about the existing ability.
Vern's got the same issue.
Yep.
All right. You got that, David?
Yep. I mean, replacing these plants.
Does anybody have any heartburn with that? It's protected for those exceptions that exist out there. So there's only, I think, three of them that we're talking about here. That protecting that existing capacity, in other words, protecting that exception to the level it's at now, and by now I mean the day the agreement is signed, I suppose, is something that we can tolerate as a region, but that we're not willing to allow expansion of that capacity. So let's say it's a 10 MGD thing. We don't want to see that going to 25 as a result of anything that we're
doing.
What
about the reverse of that? If you have a 10 million capacity right now, then whatever happens, and it's dropped to, say, 5 million, and for you to get back up to 10 million is going to cost you more than you say you would pay. So now you're 10 million or 5 million gallons short. So I'll just get that from the regional entity. Mm-hmm. That's going to put a squeeze on the region's capacity because there was 5 million gallons that we weren't planning on going to the next you guys, whoever. Mm-hmm. So should it, I mean, I agree with what you guys are saying about protecting your capacity. But should there be something that says the region is counting on you producing 10 million gallons?
I think that's fair, and you can have a buy-in. I mean, if we get down to 5 and the region says we'd love to have produce your other 5 million, then you're in. If you're not, you got to go back and fund it so you produce your 10 million.
Yeah, you should be like grandfathered in. You're in. If you're a member, you're in. And if you need more capacity, that's like a growing town.
I want us to respect each other's time, and we had said 6 o'clock was our stopping point.
Right.
I think this is an excellent conversation. I don't want to lose, you know, a mayor of a community, and I think you're going to see more of this coming out. The next time Jason is here, and Karen is going to share tomorrow, a slight modification in the schedule, just with Thanksgiving, et cetera, but I think you will see the importance of being involved in these workshops.
Yeah.
I think we've accomplished an awful lot today.
I just noticed we went 5 minutes over and I saw people leaving, so I apologize.
No,
we didn't quite finish.
There's a city council meeting going on. And I mean, people are...
So what I'll do is the things that we've reached concurrence on here, those things on Wednesday, I guess that's tomorrow morning,
We'll be reporting to the group on our progress on those things. The things that we didn't quite get to, I'll make sure we get those back at our next workshop so we can conclude that discussion. And we may end up having three topics at our next workshop, but hopefully it's only a few things that we need to hit here, and then we'll move on to some other things that are of importance as well.
I do want to ask the group, are meetings late in the day like this for a workshop going from, say, 4 till 6 best for everyone? That was the sentiment I've heard from folks, but as we build our schedule, we'll look for that.
If you could pick days far enough out, people can rearrange their schedule and make sure they said they can be there.
Right. Good.
Okay. Well,
Jason,
we got
thank
some more
you.
Tonight.
Thank you,
thanks,
all
everybody.
Of you. I think we've made some great progress. So, Karen, anything? Okay. Thank you.